Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and with Pedaling Innovations. And in this podcast, I'm going to talk about foot position and specifically why you want to be in a midfoot position and why being on the ball of your foot is actually a really bad idea for you and results in some movement issues and things like that you may not be aware of. And so I'm doing this podcast because after spending years working to help educate people about the pedal stroke when it comes to pulling up on the backstroke and why you don't need to do that, after creating the Catalyst pedal, which the whole concept behind it was to optimize the midfoot position because, you know, the science, the movement principles, there's real world evidence as well that all point to this midfoot position actually being better. And after creating a pedal that optimized the midfoot position, I started to get a lot of pushback from certain circles and from some people. And I realized that that being on the ball of the foot is one of these sacred cows in cycling, and that people are really married to this idea without even really understanding what it is that they're advocating and using reasons and analogies that really have not a whole lot of anything to do with what's really going on. And so I realized that I needed to take the time to put it all together and sit down and just share all the information with you guys to help everyone out there understand what is really going on with your foot when you're on the bike, and how do we apply the science and the movement principles to the bike instead of just, you know, doubling down on tradition and just defending it even more ferociously when these things are presented. And so that's my intention. I'm hoping to really help some riders who can, really all riders can benefit from this information, but that's what I'm hoping to do. So let's dig in a little bit to foot position and how we got where we're at, and then start to go down the list of the various reasons that people give for why you want to be on the ball of the foot. And I will say up front, this is not going to be a short podcast. This is not elementary level stuff that I'm getting into here. And that's one of the problems that we kind of run into here, is that when you get into movement and how to coach movement, you need to have more than an elementary level knowledge of this stuff to really understand what you're talking about and what you're seeing. And so if you're looking for like a 15-minute podcast that wraps up with a couple quick sound bites, like, this is not going to be the one. Like, we're going to go deep into some stuff. I'm going to try I've got a bunch of notes to help keep me on point. But, you know, we're going to need to peel the onion back a little bit here because the water's gotten really murky over the years. And so it's going to take a little bit to clear things up and help people see what's really going on here. So, like I said, let's take a step back in time and actually look at, you know, where we get where we're at. And so being on the ball of the foot stems from the false assumption by guys in the mid to late 1800s about, you know, how the best way to pedal a bike is. Again, the history of the bike is what we know as a bike today is known as the safety bicycle. And it was invented in the mid, you know, late 1800s is when it really got perfected and took off. And so if you think about it, it wasn't that long ago that what we know as a bike became a reality. And so you literally had these guys in bowler hats and with handlebar mustaches trying to theorize about the best way to pedal this new contraption thing that we've got here. They had no real way to test these theories, but again, like, to them, it makes sense. It looks like you're running or walking when you're on this bicycle thing, so you want to push through the ball of the foot just like you do when you run or walk. And so that was really the birth of this theory. And like I said, it sounds great until you start to look at the science and the movement principles that we've added to our knowledge base since then. Every once in a while, it's good to take a look at tradition in light of new discoveries and new things that we know and say, does this hold up? And so that's kind of what I want to do here. Real quick, though, I once heard science described as a beautiful theory destroyed by an ugly fact. And that's really what we have going on here. The theory behind being on the ball of your foot is great. It's a beautiful theory, and it's been refined, and the analogies and arguments have been refined over many years. But the problem is there's these ugly facts that have to be dealt with, and you can't just stick your head in the sand and pretend that these movement principles and the science that we have now doesn't exist. And also, you know, this sounds kind of funny, but I once read somewhere that a lot of people assume that at one point in time, there was a council of smart people who got together and sat down and looked at stuff. And I think that, again, this is another kind of thing that we have going on, that that all the writers out there who talk about being on the ball of the foot, they assume that at some point some really smart people got together and sat down and studied this and confirmed that, yes, this is what you want to do, and that we can go forward saying this, feeling firm in our convictions, because this council of smart people occurred at some point and validated this stuff. But the problem is, again, like, that's just not the case. And so, you know, we have a couple things that are working against us when it comes to, you know, why people think this way. But again, just some things to keep in mind as we move forward about how something can become very popular despite being wrong. But anyways, back to the matter at hand. Your lower leg, which basically includes your feet, your ankle, and your calf. These act in two very different ways. This area acts in two very different ways depending on a very simple question. Does your foot lose contact or come off of whatever it is on? If the answer is yes, if your foot does come off of what it's on, like when you're running or walking or jumping, then you want to push through the ball of your foot, since you want your foot to break contact with what it's on so you can propel your center of gravity through space. But if the answer is no, all right, if your foot does not come off the ground or what it's in contact with, like when you're bending down to pick up a box or you're bending down to pick up a kid or you're lifting in the gym, specifically doing things like squats and deadlifts and lunges, if you've ever been in there, you've had a trainer yell at you to keep your heels down on the ground, then you want your heels to stay down because you want both ends of your arch supported and your center of gravity balanced over your feet. So in the case of riding our bike, let's look at riding our bike through this simple question. Do our feet come off of the pedals? Now, obviously, in some cases, if you're a slope style rider doing some sort of tricks or something like that, the answer is yes. But in general, the vast majority of the time, for the vast majority of riders listening to this, the answer is no. Your feet stay in contact with the pedal. And since your feet are staying in contact with the pedals, as your bike carries your center of gravity through space, you want to have your heel supported as well. Now, here's the thing. This is a simple yes-no question. There is no third option that magically becomes available just because being on a bike is different. I mean, no matter how much people want there to be, there's no third option. It's a yes-no question. So the problem is just because you don't understand how to square this away with what you think you know, it doesn't mean it's not true. And you can't just explain it away by saying, well, being on a bike is different. It's not different. You just don't understand what you're looking at. You've been biased by being told you need to be on the ball of the foot. And so it's clouded your ability to really, really critically analyze what you're looking at. But like I said, this is a binary yes, no, 1-0 type question. Does your foot come off of what it's in contact with? Yes or no? In sports and activities where it does come off of contact with, you do want to push through the ball of your foot. If the answer is no, activities and sports where it doesn't, and there are other sports, which I'll get into here in a little bit, that a lot of people forget about in this discussion, but you want that heel down. You want a balanced foot position in those cases. And so because being on the ball of your foot, when your foot's not coming off of the pedal, it violates this movement principle. And it creates several problems, including unbalanced feet that lead to compensations in the body that look like better movement to the untrained eye but aren't. It places extra tension in the calves and feet and also in the upper body. It has poor power transfer into the pedals. It puts extra stress on the ankles and knees. And it also makes it harder to recruit your hips, and which are the muscles, the main muscle group that drive your pedal stroke. So again, it's like people want to pretend it's kind of a personal preference thing, but the reality is that it's not. Like, there are actual negative consequences that come from being on the ball of your foot. And you can ride on the ball of your foot. You can get very good at riding on the ball of your foot, but that doesn't mean that these consequences aren't there and that over time you're not going to pay the piper, so to speak, for this stuff, and that there is a better way to do it that doesn't carry all of these potential negative consequences. So again, just something to keep in mind. But next thing I want to actually bring up is science, because I've mentioned this a couple times, but there are some scientific studies that, you know, by themselves are very interesting, but when you connect the dots between what they find, you see something very important. Now, the first study that I got here, and again, I've got my notes for this on my blog, and so I've got all these references and stuff there, and so I'm just going to run through the reference real quick. But the first study that I'm going to talk about, J.R. Van Sickle Jr., M.L. Hull, in the Journal of Biomechanics, 2007, this study showed that there was no difference in the power or economy between pushing through the ball of the foot and the midfoot position. They thought there would be a decrease in these factors because the popular theory was and still is about ankling and needing to use the ankle for leverage and to push and pull with, and that by taking the ankle out of the equation by using the midfoot position, that you would actually lose power and efficiency in the pedal stroke. But that wasn't the case. They found out that there was no difference. So if being on the ball of the foot was better, then it would have won. But what they also found was real interesting, because even though it was a tie, what they found was that the midfoot position took stress off the calf and Achilles tendon. And they theorized that it was instead being placed on the hip. So even though the power and economy was the same, how that power and economy was being created was different. The way the body was using was different. You know, being on the ball of the foot put more stress on the foot and the calf and Achilles tendon. And being midfoot took the stress off of that area and instead placed it on the hips. Now, that's interesting when you look at the second study. Elmer, S.J., P.R., Barrett, T. Korf, and J.C. Martin, Medicine and Science in Sports and Exercise, 2011. This study found that the hips, which the hips are your glutes and your hamstrings acting to extend the hip joint. That's when I say the hips, it's those two muscles working together at the hip joint to extend and flex the hips. These are the major drivers of the pedal stroke at all intensity levels. And this means that the quads are never the major driver of the pedal stroke. Again, a really common misunderstanding about the pedal stroke is that the quads are the primary driver and a very important muscle in that. And I'm not saying they're not important, but the hips are the major driver of the pedal stroke at all times. And so it's the hips that are driving it. So collectively, when you look at what these two studies found, it found that the midfoot position allowed for better recruitment of the hips, and that the hips are the major muscles used in the pedal stroke. So if the hips are the major drivers of the pedal stroke, the major muscles used, and the midfoot position allows for better recruitment of the hips, then it seems that the science would favor a pedal that optimizes a foot position that optimizes that hip recruitment, you know, and that foot position is the midfoot position. So despite science, movement principles, and real world results all pointing to the use of a balanced foot position, there's still several arguments used by the ball of the foot backers to support their claims of it being a better foot position. And so I want to start to address these issues one by one. And there's basically, like, I forget how many I came up with, like five or six, and some will take a little longer than others to dismiss. But by the time I get to the end, you'll start, you know, I'll kind of address all of them. You'll start to see that a lot of these are just a little bit different flavor of the same argument. And so it's really just kind of a matter of helping people understand what they're looking at and seeing. And so then people can start to see for themselves. And so the first one that people throw out there is that you need to be on the ball of your foot for agility, because if you look at other sports and athletes, they're pushing through the ball of their foot, and that's when they're the most agile. And so since we're on our bikes and we need to be agile, we need to be on the ball of our foot too. But there's two problems here. Now, first, even though we're looking at athletes that are running and walking, okay, so that makes them a yes in the movement principle question. So we've already kind of answered this. Like, these athletes when they're being agile, as is being described, they're running and jumping and stuff like that, their foot is losing contact with the ground. It's coming off of whatever it's on. So the answer is yes. And so, you know, well, you do want to push the ball to the foot, but that's only true part of the time, right? Like if you look at those sports, they still make use of a balanced foot position, especially when they need to change levels. So for example, if you look at a shortstop bending down to field the ground ball, you'll see that he has his heel down because as he's moving, as he's doing that part of his sport, he doesn't want his foot to come off the ground. And so that makes it a no sport at that moment. And so you keep the heel down on the ground. There is no, like, those sports aren't, they're not on the balls of their feet all the time. Again, like the only exception would be sprinting, which you can't keep up that high of a stride rate for very long before the heel starts to drop down. You start to at least make some sort of midfoot contact with the ground. But there is no sport where you're just balancing on the balls of your feet all the time. All of these sports make use of both a balanced foot position and pushing off the ball of the foot when they're wanting to propel their center of gravity through space. So we're basically being told that we're the only athletes who never want their heels to contact something and have any support the entire time they're playing their sport, which doesn't make any sense logically, right? So, but here's the other problem that we have, that we're looking at the wrong athletes to draw comparisons to. So again, like I've mentioned, the athletes that people usually mention, soccer players, baseball players, football players, you know, track athletes, you know, insert whatever athlete you want. Like all of those comparisons are athletes that are running and jumping. And so they're propelling their center of gravity through space. And so they're wanting to push through the ball of their foot to do that. But there's another class of athletes that always get forgotten about when this discussion comes up. And they share way more in common with us than athletes that run and jump. And these are the athletes that ride something that carries them through space. That's what's happening with us on our bikes. Again, confusion comes because we're looking at mountain biking and it looks like this dynamic, you know, beautiful sport. And it is, right? But the bike is carrying us through space. We are not actually moving anywhere. Our bikes are moving and we are on top of our bikes. And so we're riding our bikes. So when you look at athletes that ride something, athletes like surfers, skateboarders, motocross riders, equestrian riders, when you look at these athletes, you see an almost exclusive use of the balanced foot position. So, you know, saying that you can't be agile with your heel down, it doesn't stand up when you look at these athletes. Surfers almost never have their heels off the board. They always have their heels down and in contact with their boards. Again, unless they're jumping off their boards, but they don't have any problems moving. Nobody's going to accuse a surfer of not being agile and not being able to move. A skateboarder, same thing. They keep their heels down. The only time they're coming off their heels is when they're pushing through the ball of the foot for a trick. And when you watch them when they're jumping and they're landing like big stair set jumps, they're not pushing through. They don't have the ball of their foot down. They're trying to get their heels down and keep them down on their skateboards because that's what's going to allow them to best absorb the impact. So when you look at athletes that share more in common with us, they use a balanced foot position almost exclusively, and they do it because they know that it helps them be more agile. Being on the ball of your foot actually decreases agility for these athletes. So you can't say that being on the ball of your foot improves, you know, that's how you're agile. If you're not on the ball of your foot, you're not agile. That's just not true. It only does so in a few select cases with some sports, and none of those things have anything to do with riding a bike. So hopefully we can just put this thing to bed. Like, let's compare apples to apples, look at athletes that ride something like we do and look at what they do and understand that even athletes that are running and jumping are using this balanced foot position to help them move and change levels efficiently, which is what we're wanting to do on a bike. We're wanting to move and change levels and is on our bike as it's carrying us through space. And so again, you know, hopefully we can put that argument to bed there. The second reason, a real popular one that I got here, is that Olympic lifters push through the ball of their feet. So Again, yes, they do it at a certain point. But first, Olympic lifters both start and end with a balanced foot position. They spend way more time with a balanced foot position than being on the ball of their foot. So why are we focused on this one moment in time instead of looking at what are they doing like most of the time? All right. So again, if you have had good Olympic lifting coaching, then you know that you're literally supposed to jump off the ground and then stomp your heels back down. Now we're talking like real full cleans and snatches, not just power cleans and snatches. Okay. If we're going to talk about Olympic lifters, we got to talk about real Olympic lifting. Okay. So when you do that, you can hear the stomp that a good Olympic lifter has when they come off the, when they're lifting. So, you know, while their feet aren't coming off the ground much, the intention is there, right? Their feet do come off the ground for a moment. So at that moment, it becomes a yes sport in that, hey, is the foot coming off the ground or not? Yes, it is coming off the ground at that moment. Okay, push through the ball of the foot. All right, great. Okay. But while you do push off the ball of the foot at that moment of max power, Olympic lifters quickly get their heels back down. That's where that distinctive sound of the stomp a good lifter makes comes from, because of how fast they're able to transition back down to that balanced foot position. They do this because they know they cannot effectively absorb the load as it drops back down on them until their heels are down. So you've got to get your heels down to use your hips. You can't change levels to absorb impacts when you're balanced on your toes. All right. So again, you know, when you're looking at what's really going on with Olympic lifting, all of a sudden it's like, okay, like they're using a balanced foot position. There's one moment when they're coming off the ground. They're literally trying to jump off the ground, but they're quickly getting back to that balanced foot position because that's what's going to help them absorb the load and in the most balanced way. So, you know, if you're looking at how that compares to us on the bike, seems like that midfoot position. That midfoot position is where they start and it's where they end. It's where they spend most of their time. And as long as they're wanting their foot to be in contact with the ground, that's where they're at. They only move from that balanced foot position for a split second as they're trying to literally jump off the ground because it's part of their sport. All right. So again, hopefully we can put that one to bed as well. So the next one is when you jump or land from a jump, you use the balls of your feet. And, you know, I technically address this one again by you're jumping, okay, or you're landing from a jump. So the ball of the foot, your foot is not in contact with anything. So you do want to use the ball of your foot. It's very easy to run it through that yes, no question and say, okay, well then yes, you do. But once again, even though that is true, if we dig into it a little bit more, again, it actually supports the midfoot position, because just like with the Olympic lifting, most jumps will start and end with a balanced foot position and spend more time there than actually being on the ball of the foot. You can't generate force from a dead stop as effectively when balanced on your toes. So if you're doing a vertical jump, you wouldn't balance on your toes and then do it. You would start from a balanced midfoot position and you would explode through the toes at the moment of wanting to come off the ground. If you tried to jump, either do like a broad jump, a standing broad jump, or a vertical jump while balanced on your toes, you're not going to be able to jump as far. And one of the reasons for that is because you need to use your hips to effectively generate that force. And when you're balanced on your toes, you can't use your hips. So on the bike, we don't get the luxury of being able to use elastic energy in the muscles like you do when running. And this is, again, something that makes riding a bike very different from running or walking. And that is that as the trail leg is coming up on the backstroke, it's not under load. And so we're not getting the stretch shortening cycle and the a lot of other sports and stuff make use of. And so we're literally having to overcome a dead stop for the most part. We're not able to use the stretch shortening cycle as effectively because of the nature of pedaling a bike. And so this makes it important that you're using that midfoot position, because this is what you're wanting to use to generate that force from that dead stop. So anyways, the point is sorry, I was getting a little like too often, you know, esoteric with that one there. But so when you are jumping, especially from a dead stop, you're starting from that midfoot position because that's what's going to allow you to generate the most force from a dead stop, which you then finish off with by pushing through the ball of the foot. But you can't start on the ball of the foot or you won't be able to generate as much force over the course of the jump. And when you're landing from a jump, while the ball of the foot is the first thing to touch the ground, you're quickly getting the heel back down. You're basically using the ankle to guide the heel back down to the ground because you can't start to use your hips to absorb the rest of the jump until your heels are down. Try to land a jump and not let your heels hit the ground. It's a much rougher experience. As soon as your heels touch the ground, you'll feel how the rest of your legs are able to start moving and absorb the jump. So your heels have to come down, or else the landing is going to be much harder on your knees and ankles. And it's also much harder to stay balanced when landing, right? Especially if you want to stay balanced, you got to get those heels down. So even when jumping or landing from a jump, you can see how that midfoot balanced foot position comes into play with them as well. Like no one's just jumping and landing from a jump exclusively on the ball of their foot, which is what you're being asked to do if you're stuck on the ball of your foot when you're riding your bike. Another common reason, told you guys there's a lot of these things, man. This is what makes it tough is that there's so many reasons that people throw out there and that it's really easy to confuse people with, right? So the next one that'll come up is you need to use your ankles for suspension and or for power generation. So again, these have actually been answered, right? Like hopefully by this point you're starting to see like, okay, like there's a couple things that you need to know. And then when you look at this argument through, you know, that knowledge, all of a sudden a lot of these things become more clear. So using your ankles for suspension, we just talked about this when landing from a jump. I explained how the ankles aren't really used to absorb impacts as much as get the foot to where you need it so you can get the heel down and the hips can absorb the impact. Excuse me. You know, even if you want to land on the ball of the foot, you still need that heel to be supported in the process so you can use the legs for suspension. If you stay balanced on the ball of your foot, then you're having a harder time using the hips, which actually makes it harder to absorb impacts. So relying, being on the ball of your foot actually makes it harder to absorb impacts using the muscles that are designed to absorb impacts, which are your hips. And then I shared a study that looked at using the ball of the foot versus the midfoot position. And it found that you didn't need the ankle for power generation and that doing so placed more stress on the lower leg and took stress off of the hips. And so, again, the idea of using your ankles for suspension, it's just not true. Your ankles aren't used for suspension. They're used to help get the heel down so that you can use the true suspension joints in the body, which are the hips and the knees to a lesser extent. But it's basically you want to use your hips and then your knees and then your ankles, like in that order, and you know, relying on the hips mostly and just using those other joints to take up the slack. But that's how you absorb impacts in the lower body and power generation. Like you said, hopefully you're starting to see that the hips being the major power generator, without the heel supported, you can't use the hips. You know, so that's why there's no advantage to being on the ball of your foot for power generation. So the next one, number five, is pros use the ball of the foot instead of the midfoot position. And this kind of falls under the category of what I jokingly refer to as the Tour de France argument. Now, the Tour de France argument is when someone throws out, well, why aren't the riders in the Tour de France doing it then? Or you know, whatever the case may be. And so there's all sorts of variations of this, insert whatever pro rider or race or whatever someone wants to fall back on. But it's basically just saying, well, the top riders do it this way, so obviously that makes it right. And you know, it's a kind of a dangerous logic argument to use. So, you know, first off, while it is technically true, there are a lot of riders who use the ball of the foot position. There are a lot that don't. And if you Google some pictures of flat pedal riders like Sam Hill, Connor Fearon, and Brandon Siminuk, they all use a decidedly more midfoot position at least part of the time. None of those guys are on the ball of the foot, especially towards the middle of a run. You know, you got to remember too that pro riders came up practicing being on the ball of the foot, and they never, a lot of them never really tried and gave the midfoot position a lot of time or much of a chance. You know, in an interview with Connor Fearon, who's a top 10 World Cup downhill rider who races on flats, he told me that he starts out on the ball of his foot at the top of a race run because that's what everyone tells him to do, but that his feet naturally go to the midfoot position once he gets going, and that he's actually very comfortable in that midfoot position. So that just speaks to the psychological pressure that you get coming up in the cycling world to do and conform to what everyone else around you is doing. Now, the truth is that pro riders, man, they got a lot going for them, and they'd probably kick our butts no matter what foot position they use. I mean, that's the truth of it. You know, these people are outliers. It makes it really hard for normal people to read too much into what, what they can do and get away with from what a pro rider's doing. And so, like I said, there's a lot of factors to keep in mind there when looking at what are the pro riders doing. Like I said already, it's not like you can't ride on the ball of your foot and you can't get very good on the ball of your foot. It's just there's some very real issues that come from being on the ball of the foot, and that it's not necessarily the optimal thing to do. And two more things to keep in mind with the pro rider argument. One is that, kind of a shameless plug here, but up until the Catalyst pedal, no pedal had been designed to optimize the midfoot position. So it's really kind of hard to know. Looking at riders trying to use a midfoot position on pedals that weren't really designed for that is it's tough. You know, you can do it and get some of the benefits, but it's not the same thing as having a pedal that was designed from the ground up to optimize that midfoot position, which is, you know, what I did with the Catalyst pedal. The last thing to consider here is that the world of sport, it's full of examples of the pros being wrong. One example is the Fosbury flop. You know, at one point in Olympic in history, Olympic and world champions were using a scissor kick technique for the high jump. And, you know, along comes Dick Fosbury with what we know of today is the high jump technique, where you're jumping over with your back head first. And he proved that the scissor kick technique was actually an inferior technique, and that, you know, you had been crowning Olympic and world champions who were using an inferior technique. It was just that the superior technique had not been discovered and really become popularized yet, and due to big part of how hard it is sometimes to overcome the traditional way to do stuff. And so I do understand, you know, from that standpoint, that it is going to take some riders at the top level bucking the trend and using the midfoot position and starting to do well before a lot of people will pay attention, because, you know, we do have this strong attachment to pro riders and what they're doing. But hopefully you understand now that you got to be really careful when pulling out the pro rider card, because they have been wrong in the past. They generally are outliers. And, you know, there are other pros that aren't necessarily using that ball of the foot position. So, again, there's a lot more to the story than just that. So, now, last but not least, I want to get into the argument that being on the ball of your foot is going to help you move better or pump on the bike or hip hinge on the bike. And, you know, this podcast was actually inspired by a very vocal proponent of the ball of the foot position posting something claiming that at a skills camp that he ran, that he was noticing that a rider was having trouble getting into a hip hinge and pumping on the pump track and moving the way that he wanted to see him move. And when he looked, he saw that he was in a midfoot position. And when he moved him to the ball of his foot, all of a sudden he could hinge better and move better and things looked better. And so this proved that being on the ball of your foot actually helps you hinge, and that being in a midfoot position makes it harder to hinge. And this is a very dangerous argument, because it really, like what I'm about to explain here, it's not true. And you're actually doing people harm when you do that, when you put them on the ball of the foot and expect that to help them to move better on the bike rather than understanding how to help them move better yourself. So first, there is a big difference between a compensation pattern and authentic movement. Now, the two may look similar to the untrained eye, but they're very different. And it takes years of working with people. It took me years of working with multiple people, hours a day in a gym, to really start to get my eye trained to notice these subtle differences between what was proving to be a compensation pattern that looked good and what was actually authentic balanced movement. Now, authentic movement comes from a balanced position and ends in a balanced position. That is one of the hallmarks of an athlete, is that they're balanced. They start and end in a balanced position. And this requires the body to use the most efficient and balanced pathways to get there. Now, compensations occur when the body runs into a roadblock, quote unquote, along that pathway. And it has to find a way around that roadblock. So authentic movement is going to rely on the body's natural alignment and stability. And this is going to require less energy, and it's going to put less wear and tear on the body. Compensation patterns, these go around the body's natural alignment, and they create extra tension to make up for a loss of balance. When you go around, when you're aligned, you're balanced. When you go off of your alignment, you go off those balance points, and you're going to have to create tension in other areas to make up for that loss of balance. And this is going to require more energy, and it's going to put more wear and tear on the body. Now, a really good example of this is coming up on the toes when squatting. This is a classic compensation pattern. Somewhere on the way down, when you tell someone to do a squat, somewhere on the way down, the body runs into a mobility or strength roadblock, but it finds a way to keep coming down. The body is a beautiful compensation mechanism, and it has to be, right? Like, it's not worried about where you're going to be in 10 years. It's worried about where you're at right now. And if you're telling it that you need to squat down, it's going to find a way to get you down as close to the ground as it can. All right, so it finds a way around the strength and mobility roadblocks that are in its way from using, you know, the natural, or, you know, the authentic movement, and it does this by shifting weight to the toes, or one of the common ways is to shift the weight to the toes. There's other ones like rounding the back or whatever it is. I'm just going to talk about the toes here, but when you see someone start to lose their form, that's a you know, kind of a more common term. When someone starts to lose their form, that's a compensation pattern starting to come in because they've hit one of these roadblocks. And while these compensation patterns, they do allow you to come down further into the squat, you know, if you, especially coming up on the toes, for example, this is going to unbalance the foot. You no longer have the heel supported. So now it's going to require the calves and the feet to get stiffer to help keep you balanced on your feet. Now, this is going to result in a weaker movement. You're not going to be able to squat as much weight if you're coming up on your toes, and it's going to put more wear and tear on the body. You're going to have extra stress on the ankle joint from the tension there of trying to stabilize, and you're also going to have extra stress on the knees from just running the stress through the joints differently from not having a balanced foot position. So that's a classic difference between a compensation pattern versus authentic movement. Authentic movement, you watch, and they're able to maintain a balanced foot position. They're able to maintain good alignment the whole way up and down. And that's what you're looking for from someone on the bike. All right, now, here's what's happening. When you put someone on the ball of their feet, you create an unbalanced foot because you shift their weight forward. Like if someone puts the weight on the ball of the foot, the weight shifts forward. Your body recognizes this forward weight shift, and it will automatically start to push the hips back, hinge the hips back to compensate and keep you balanced over your feet. You went forward, your body pushes your center of gravity back a little bit to compensate so that you can continue to feel balanced. Now, if you have someone who struggles with their hip hinge with a balanced foot, so their feet are down on the ground and you're the heel's balanced and you're asking them to do a hip hinge and they're having trouble with it, then if you put them on the balls of their feet, you're putting them into this hip hinge compensation pattern. Now, it's technically going to be easier for them to come, you know, in and out of their hip hinge. It's not going to be as balanced and steady looking as someone who's doing it with a balanced foot, but that moving in and out of the hip hinge and having your weight tip forward on the balls of your feet, It comes at a price. And it's not the same thing as using and teaching authentic, balanced movement. Okay, so first thing that happens, this is going to create extra tension in the body. It's going to make, especially in the feet, it's going to create extra tension to make up for that loss of balance. You know, this is another movement principle that you can't avoid no matter how much you don't want it to exist. If you unbalance the body, it has to compensate in some way to make up for that. So if you've unbalanced the foot by unsupporting the heel and forcing all of the weight to go to the ball of the foot, the body has to do something to compensate for that. And those compensations require energy. Now, the tension primarily is going to show up in the feet, ankles, and calves. I mean, you can try this for yourself. Just, you know, stand there and go from a midfoot position and note how everything feels. And then, you know, raise your heels off the ground just a little bit and sit there and wait just 10, 15 seconds. And then note how much more tension that you have in your feet, ankles, and calves. And again, that just shows how the body has to compensate to keep you balanced. You feel balanced, but there's a price for it. Okay, that tension is it costs metabolic energy, and it's creating stiffness over time. Your body's just going to get stiff down there because it that's more metabolically efficient to be stiff than it is to be, you know, create that tension all the time. So if you're always putting your calf and ankle and foot under that tension, eventually it's just going to get stiff. But anyways, and so again, that's one of the reasons that a lot of people who cycle a lot, especially those who spend a lot of time on the balls of their feet, tend to have, like, you know, bad feet and calves and ankle problems and stuff like that. So the tension also shows up in the upper body. Now, the handlebars, because you can grab the handlebars, you're able to use your upper body to offset the loss of balance that you have at your feet as well. So again, this helps you feel balanced. And this is one of the insidious things your handlebars do for you on the bike, is that they allow you to feel relatively balanced despite your feet being in this unbalanced position. You know, if you're standing on just the balls of your feet without your hands touching anything, it feels unsteady and it gets pretty tiring real quickly. But again, if you try this little experiment, go up on the balls of your feet, and then this time put your hands on something. Like if there's a counter in front of you or a desk or something, just put your hands down on it. And you're going to notice how the feet and lower legs are able to relax. Okay, there's still tension there, but now you've picked up some tension in the upper body. Now your upper body's got a little extra tension. And so it's that mix of tension at the feet and the lower leg that helps you feel balanced even though you're not authentically balanced. Because again, like, you know, what is balance? Like, yeah, you're balanced because of these compensation patterns that your body is using to help you stay balanced. But that's not the same thing as authentic balance, right? So that mix of tension in the lower feet and lower leg and also the upper body, it not only wastes energy because the muscles are now more metabolically active and have to use energy, but it also makes it harder to move and react on the trail. Because if these muscles are acting as stabilizers, they're not available to assist with the movements, okay? So your muscles are either prime movers, synergist, assisting muscles, or stabilizers, you know, very just kind of general definitions here. But if they're stabilizing, like by definition, if they're doing one thing, they can't do another, all right? So if your muscles that you want to have available to help with assist with a movement or even be a primary driver of a movement are being used as stabilizers, they can't do their job, their original job. So as soon as you unbalance the feet and you cause other muscles to kick on and start acting as stabilizers to make up for that loss of balance, you've actually taken muscles away from the pool, the ability for you to react quickly to things happening on the trail, and also for you to use those muscles to move and create the movements you need to execute the skills and stay balanced on the bike. So the tension is not a good thing. That's not a good trade-off. So even though you can feel balanced on the bike, on the ball of the foot because of these compensations, I don't think they're a good trade-off. You know, the second thing is that honestly, being on the ball of your foot makes it harder to recruit your hips. Like, the heels must be supported to optimally recruit the hips when the foot stays in contact with what it is on. All right. And when you take this movement principle in light of the J.R. Van Sickle study that I referenced from the Journal of Biomechanics in 2007, that showed that being in the midfoot position or being on the ball of the foot actually took stress off of the hips and put it on the on the calf and Achilles tendon in that lower leg. So again, that points to the hinging that you're seeing being a compensation and not authentic movement. If you put someone on the ball of the foot and there's a study that there's a movement principle that says you're not going to be able to use your hips as effectively, and there's a study that says you're not using your hips as effectively, then again, that just points to whatever you think you're seeing that looks good is a compensation and not authentic movement actually coming from the hips the way that you want it to. Okay, so again, here's the thing. Recognizing the difference between a compensation pattern and authentic movement, it's not easy, but it's an important part of being a coach in any sport. Okay, and then knowing how to fix these compensations and turn them into authentic movement is something every coach should have a plan for. All right, so in our sport, mountain biking, in this particular instance, if someone cannot do a hip hinge or get into the attack position on their bike, the first thing you have to do is take them off their bike. Check and see if they can do a flat-footed, a midfoot, you know, balanced foot hip hinge. You know, not on a trainer holding their bike, you know, not with someone holding their rear tire, just them standing flat-footed on the ground while getting into and out of their hip hinge. And if they struggle with that, if they look like they're having trouble with that, then do not pass go. Do not collect $200. That is the problem. You have to have some plan for helping someone hinge better off their bike. You cannot fix basic movement patterns like a hip hinge while on the bike or with skills drills. You have to check and fix the hip hinge off of the bike. And then once a rider can hip hinge off of the bike, they can easily apply it to the bike. You're not going to find me someone who can easily hip hinge off of the bike that can't do it on the bike. All right, they may need a little practice and a little coaching to help them understand how to apply their hip hinge to the bike. But if you can't hip hinge off the bike, you're not doing it on the bike either, no matter what it looks like you're doing. It's some sort of compensation pattern that you're creating using the handlebars and other things to help make up for it. So when you push someone into an unbalanced foot position to create a hinging compensation pattern, that's not the same thing as teaching someone to move better on their bike. You should be able to hinge from a balanced foot position both on and off the bike. And the hinge should be fixed off the bike instead of using, you know, really what it boils down to. I mean, I don't want to sound like too derogatory, but what these things are, they're basically parking lot and pump track tricks that are applied to make up for not knowing how to actually coach and fix authentic movement. And so these parking lot and pump track tricks will help someone look and kind of feel in the parking lot and on the pump track that they're doing something better. But you know, you go visit them 6 months down the road and it hasn't helped. They're not any better than where they were because they weren't taught authentic movement that allows them to focus on the right things and continue to build their balance and skills from that authentic movement understanding. And instead, they've got a back pocket full of parking lot and pump track tricks that they're trying to bust out that don't really work over the long term. So now the worst part of this is that when you put someone on the balls of their feet, then everything changes, okay? Everything they learn from that point on is going to involve some sort of compensation. As soon as you unbalance the foot, there's going to be compensation to make up for that lack of balance. There's no way around that. So that means that you're not learning true, authentic movement skills to apply to the bike when you're on the ball of your foot. But instead, you're just learning a series of compensations that may look better, but they're not really creating the balance movement that you want on the bike. And so that's why it's important that if you are trying to improve your skills, that you don't get pressured into going onto the ball of your foot, even though it may initially feel better in some instances because it's not true authentic movement, and you need to continue to do just you know, work on moving better off of the bike and applying that better movement to the bike. But you got to be wary, because if someone's teaching you and they ride on the ball of their foot, then you got to question whether what they've actually learned and are teaching people is actually authentic movement or just compensation patterns that they've learned to make up for their bad foot position. So anyways, that's the truth there, guys. So by this point, I hope I've addressed like all of the common reasons and analogies that are, you know, used and explain how they're either just wrong or they're being taken out of their true context, and they really don't stand up when you look at them critically. And I've also explained how being on the ball of the foot, it puts you in an unbalanced foot position, and that forces you into a compensation pattern. And that's not the same thing as helping you create an authentic hip hinge on the bike. It's also going to put extra stress on the knees, ankles, and feet, and it makes it harder to recruit the hips. Now, at this point, if you want to continue to believe that being on the ball of your foot is still a good idea, despite everything I've presented here, despite the science, despite the movement principles, just all of the stuff that I've presented here, that's great. But I expect that you have something to present that I'm missing, or a movement principle that I'm not aware of, or a study, or something more than just your opinion or your wishes on this matter. This is one of the most frustrating things. I go through all of this effort to put all of this real, you know, real stuff together. This is science, movement principles, all of this stuff. It takes a long time for me to have arrived to, you know, figured all this stuff out and put all this stuff together. And then people just come and dismiss it with like, well, you know, being on your bike is different. It's like, wait a minute, but how do you explain this? How do you explain this in light of that? You can't just wish it away. You know, it's not how it works. So, you know, with that said, I know there's going to be people who are going to cling to this notion to the bitter end. I mean, let's be honest. There's a lot of egos. There's a lot of money tied up in the current paradigms surrounding foot position and stuff. And it isn't human nature to embrace change in general. It's really human nature to double down when presented with something that challenges a long-held belief and really try to, you know, hold on to it even tighter. And so, but, you know, honestly, in the same way, there's people that want to believe the earth is flat no matter how much evidence you show them. And honestly, that's the point I feel like where this conversation seems to have gotten. There's a lot of people in denial about the evidence, and they use catch-all phrases like riding a bike is different to give themselves the mental wiggle room they need to feel comfortable with the lack of evidence supporting their views. All right, but the other thing is, we also need to feel all right with someone feeling bad about their previous ideas. There's this whole like kumbaya, it's just personal preference, let's not anybody feel bad thing. But, you know, first, no one can make anyone feel a certain way. Like, we need to be adults here and not be so sensitive. You know, go read some Stoic philosophy. Go read On the Meaning of Life by Viktor Frankl. Like, no one makes you feel anyway, okay? Like, you let yourself feel bad about that. But let's not be so sensitive here. But second, as a sport, we're not going to improve if we wrap ourselves in a cocoon of denial when it comes to things like being right or wrong, like, you know, about things like foot position. You know, honestly, our gift to the next generation is to go through the tough parts that come with growth so they don't have to. All right, why would we want our kids and our grandkids still being confused about this stuff because we were afraid to face the facts, do the hard work that needed to be done to help the sport grow and move past these myths and half-truths that just pervade our sport, and most people don't even know where they've come from, and this is just one of many, many examples. But, you know, anyways, like I said, we can give a gift to the next generation by not feeling, you know, being all right with people feeling bad and recognizing there is a right and a wrong foot position, and that, you know, honestly, like if you want to continue to go forward thinking that pushing someone into a compensation pattern by creating an unbalanced foot that creates tension in the lower leg and the upper body. You know, if that's what you want, like if you believe that that's okay and is a good way to teach someone how to ride, then that's fine. You know, there's nothing I can do about that. But, you know, like I said, I think that based on the evidence and based on the stuff I presented, I believe there is a right and a wrong foot position. I believe that being on the ball of the foot has negative consequences, makes it harder to learn how to ride your bike properly, and in many ways is one of the myths that has held our sport back the most as far as like keeping riders from being able to have fun on their bikes and not incur a lot of overuse injuries in the first place. So I think, like I said, we owe it to the next generation to kind of address stuff like this instead of stick our head in the sands about it. But anyways, all right, so to close this thing out, foot position matters a lot, all right? It dictates your balance on the bike. It dictates the efficiency of your movement on the bike, and it also is going to dictate the efficiency of your power generation on the bike. You know, outside of quote-unquote tradition, remember, dudes in bowler hats with handlebar mustaches way back in the mid to late 1800s, you know, that's what the ball of the foot supporters have on their side, is those guys. There's nothing else to support their notions. You know, but with science and movement principles supporting it, I think the midfoot position promises to help you ride better and create less wear and tear on the body in the process. So at this point, the choice is yours. It, you know, again, I think I've laid out a pretty good case, dispelled a lot of the myths, and again, at the very least, just hopefully made you think about some things that you probably haven't thought about before. But again, I think when you step back and look at things, the totality of it, the conclusion is pretty clear. And that midfoot position is definitely the optimal one for us as riders on the bike. And we need to learn to ride from there and go from there. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed this podcast. I actually had a really good time doing this and putting it together. It's been a while since I've you know, put something like this together. I think since the Flat Pedal Revolution Manifesto, you know, since I've sat down and really just put a bunch of stuff together like this to try to address this, you know, singular thing so thoroughly, so we can just hopefully just move past this as a sport and stop getting hung up on, you know, myths and half truth that just have no basis in reality. And in fact, you know, end up holding us back as riders and as a sport in general. So again, you guys can check me out at bikejames.com. I'll have this podcast posted there. You can also check out pedalinginnovations.com and learn more about the Catalyst pedal and get more about the science and the logic behind a pedal that optimizes the midfoot position and all the benefits that that has. But again, appreciate you guys listening to the podcast, and I will talk to you next time.